Amazing how time does fly. It was 3 years ago. July, it was 3 years. It was just before I accepted the call to St. Mary Magdalene's now Church of the Redeemer. I was thinking about how a blessed time it's been for us. You know, I still believe God is on the throne and He called us here. And we're in the best diocese and we have the best bishop. I'm not just saying that because he's here. If he wasn't here, I would not say it. It's the truth. You guys know that. It's amazing. When he asked me to speak, I thought he was asking me to speak on a certain topic because I had just shared with the clergy that we were partnering with this great black church in our town called the Church Moving Towards Freedom. And the only church in the world that I like that has a better name than that is this church that I came in contact with down in Brazil. And it was called the Cave of Adullam. Now, you Bible scholars will get that. If you don't recognize the reference, that's where David and all his band of ne'er-do-wells hung out. The 600 that were in debt and all kinds of problems. So I thought that he wanted me to share, because I knew through Gary and a few others that you were continuing or maybe refocusing your outreach to the city. I heard about a breakfast that you were doing for passing out cards and inviting folks. And so I thought that's what he wanted me to speak on, because we've been doing a really good work on the west side that I think is going to... I have to be careful because you're always speaking hyperbole and the pastors always get accused of doing that. But it's part of a greater thing called the Hope Initiative, which I'm sure you haven't heard, but if you ever get some free time on a computer, just hit Hope Initiative and watch this like 8-minute video that we put together about what's happening in Tuscaloosa, initiated by the mayor of Tuscaloosa, who through, I won't go through the whole thing, but he just went through a real dark time, divorce and other things, and it's just a mess. It drew him to Christ in a way that he'd just been a regular churchgoer before that, and it was Mother's Day, I think 2 years ago, and the Lord told him, you're not going to fix this city unless you call the church to do what you can't do. You can do some stuff, but most of what has to do is change hearts. And so they identified 7 areas, high crime areas. And unfortunately, all the high crime areas happen to be in the, for lack of a better word, the projects. And so I became friendly with this pastor through a prison ministry, Larry Doty. And he is one of the, I mean, someday I'd love to have him come down here and speak to y'all. This guy's just so, I mean, people, another pastor I was talking to the other day says, you just sit next to that guy and it's the presence of God. You know, we do this prison ministry. 4 guys got saved. They all came to Larry and said, I got to get saved. Pray for me. That type of guy. And he's got the only homeless shelter in the city. And he just lives by faith. He's got nothing. And the Lord, when we were up in Moravian Falls, put him on my heart. And then when I met him, he said, this is God, let's do it. Just this last week, we were in Rosedale. Rosedale is the worst project of all the 7. It's where the most murders, the most robberies, the most everything. And for the last 3 weeks, we've been knocking on doors there for a couple hours with him. Our church goes with his, and we had about 7 or 8 of us there. Wives, kids, Will and Catherine's little kids, you know, girls. You know, they're stepping out of the comfort zone a little bit. This is a place, the mothers there say they don't even let their kids go out unless there's people like us there. In the daytime, to give you an idea how horrible the place is. And we ended up, and I'll just tell you this quick story. We ended up knocking on the door of Sister Ella. Now, Sister Ella is about 90 years old, is my guess. She may be older, maybe a little younger, but she was old but not frail. And she didn't recognize Pastor Larry. At first, she didn't anyway. And they're talking, and she was a little reserved. And then he finally communicated who he was, and she said, oh, you Doty! And said, come on in. So we went into this little, you know, horrible place to live. And she was full of such joy. She was an evangelist. She'd been an evangelist. She was well-known, apparently, in the west side of Tuscaloosa for years. And she started, she says, can I, and we prayed for her, and she said, can I pray for you? And we said, sure. This woman started praying. I'm telling you, it was so funny. Will, my worship leader, he said, I could hardly stand up. I was falling down here in this dark, dark place. It was just such amazing light. And anyway, so that's all to say that I thought that's what I was going to be speaking on. stuff like that to encourage you, the biblical mandate to reach out to the poor. I think the church, Father Carl Lynn, as a matter of fact, we were meeting a couple of weeks ago, just informally, and he made a bold statement. He says, the church that's not working for the life of the unborn and for the poor are totally out of the loop right now. And of course, I agreed with him. And I think he might be onto something. He said it very forcefully. But I'm a firm believer in having what I'm supposed to say be confirmed by, like, worship. And you can basically take the two songs that Gary was led, or whoever was led to play, and you'll hear that that's how the Lord led me tonight. Basically, it's a message on an encouragement to stand firm in turbulent, tumultuous times. And it's funny how it was confirmed this morning. Like I said, I was wrestling with it up till about 9 o'clock this morning about what I was supposed to say, because I was still leaning towards telling you all these great little stories about what we're doing on the west side of Tuscaloosa. When I was led to the lectionary, it's amazing how anointed the lectionary can be sometimes. And for me, it was even more so, because I never read the Apocrypha. It's a confession. I always, when it comes up in the lectionary, I don't skip the Old Testament. I just read year two Old Testament for that day. I just say, I don't need that. And it's really funny because I only have one Apocrypha in my house. And as you can tell, I say this is my Baptist Bible, but it's really funny because it's the New Jerusalem. So it's not really too Baptist. But it's big. This is the Episcopal Bible. You know, this is there. Smaller. You can hide them better. You can hide them better. You can put them in your pocket so nobody sees you carry them. But anyway, this Bible was given to me by my high church Anglo-Catholic bishop who ordained me out in Colorado back on St. Barnabas Day, 1988. If you're real liturgical, you know that's June 11th, but otherwise. And the reason I bring that up is not to tell you all the sentimental value, but I opened it and it says, "The one who calls you is faithful." That was the word my bishop gave to me. And I can testify that it's true. Now, I was led to Maccabees. And I think y'all know a little bit of the history. I'll refresh you a little bit. And the reason I bring it up is because we always think we live in the worst times. You know, if you're living now and everything that's going on, I mean, I don't have to tell you. I mean, we could have a major world war anytime between now and January, it sounds like. That's not exaggeration. Israel is not going to let Iran play with all that stuff. Economy is a mess. And the Maccabees lived in a really bad time. I mean, Antiochus Epiphany, if you know that name, he's just a real nasty ruler, Greek ruler, who was the most profane of all to the Jews. He hated the Jews. He's the one that sacrificed the pig on the altar in the Holy of Holies. And at this point in the reading this morning, what's just happened is that they've sent 40,000 foot troops and 7,000 horse cavalry. And they're camped at Emmaus. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know Emmaus is not that far. It's like a short walk. Remember the road to Emmaus? About 7 miles, 11 miles maybe. And they're camped there. And they're in big trouble. They know it. I mean, they say, what's going to happen? And Judas Maccabeus is one of my real heroes because he never let numbers get in his way. And the reading for this morning, he marshals the group together and it says, "Then raising their voices to heaven, they cried, 'What shall we do with these people? And where are we to take them? Your holy place has been trampled underfoot and defiled. Your priests mourn their humiliation, and now the Gentiles are in alliance to destroy us. You know what they have in mind for us. How can we stand up and face them if you do not come to our aid?' Then they sounded the trumpets and raised a loud shout." There's a real pep talk there. And this is the line that I really love. He goes on to say, "Better for us to die in battle than to watch the ruin of our nation and our holy place. Whatever be the will of heaven, he will perform it." One of the tendencies when things get dark, at least what the church has done, is they tend to back away circle the wagons. You just go out through church history, go out into the desert. I mean, you know the whole story about the Essenes. I mean, just go away, pull away, you know, just go pray. Lord, you take care of us. Let the world go to hell. But the Lord, I believe, is calling his church to step up. I'm sure the bishop has shared this with you. When we're complaining about the situation in this country, and at the risk of offending people, I think we have pretty much a godless leader right now, just like they had in Greece back then. But he said he is God's gift to the church, if the church will receive it. Because the church is being called to step in. I was at a pastor's meeting last Thursday. It's a mixed group, black and white, mostly non-charismatic, mostly evangelical types, a few dispensational, but just to let you know that they normally talk about the end times. It's not one of the things of when Jesus come back, always preaching on Revelation. I think in 3 years I've never heard the topic come up. And one of the pastors said that he believed that a major shaking was coming to this country. And when he said that, he said, I'm not just talking about like a 9/11. He said, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm saying it's something that's going to be more. It's going to be like either numerous 9/11s. And this is before the crazy decision to bring terrorists to Manhattan. I think most of you know that I spent, and I mean most of you don't know, but I've shared with some of you that I spent 3 months at Ground Zero right after it happened. I walked on the ashes of those poor men and women who gave up their lives. And I'm saying, and you know how big New York is. You don't know how small that area is down there. You know, Manhattan goes to like a little kind of like this. And that's where the courthouse is. That's just crazy. I mean, and these guys are bringing this up before that, because I'm thinking that's a terrorist attack just waiting to happen. But anyway, of course, as they're talking about shaking, all I can think of is Hebrews 12. I'm sure you're familiar with the verse, but I'll read it for you because it's so good. Hebrews 12:25. Be careful that you do not refuse to listen to the one who is speaking. For if the people of Israel did not escape when they refused to listen to Moses, the earthly messenger, we will certainly not escape if we reject the one who speaks to us from heaven. When God spoke from the Mount Sinai, his voice shook the earth. But now he makes another promise. Once again, I will shake not only the earth, but the heavens also. This means that all of creation will be shaken and removed so that only unshakable things will remain. Since we are receiving a kingdom that is unshakable, let us be thankful and please God by worshiping him with holy fear and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. I don't know if the talk of end times or even severe shaking brings any kind of anxiety on you. I hope it doesn't. I hope that it doesn't. I mean, I don't fear the monetary system. I mean, I think you know that that's teetering. China's putting the pressure on us and could make this whole thing collapse at any time. They probably won't, because it'll hurt them. But I don't worry about that, about terrorist attacks, because I think the Lord is the provider, the provider. It's not the 401k. It's not the government. I mean, we start trusting. We don't say we do, but we like to check the account balances. And that brought into play Matthew 17, which was also the reading for today. If you did your morning prayer readings, it's Matthew 17, where Jesus has just told the guys, again, I'm going to die. This is it. They're going to kill me, but I'll be raised. And then it goes right to where they're asking Peter for tax money. Hey, doesn't your guy pay taxes? He's supposed to pay the temple tax. What, do you think he's special? Now Jesus says, look, I don't have to pay it. I'm the king. King doesn't have to pay tax. But just go, Peter, you're a good fisherman. Go down the lake. You just pull out a fish and there'll be a 2-drachma coin in his mouth. Now I think we hear those stories and go like, yeah, I mean, Peter's a fisherman. I'm sure he goes, I love the Lord, but this is crazy. Do you think he just went there? Oh, yeah, sure. I'll just throw my whole hook in there, big lake galley. I'm just going to pull out a fish with a 2-drachma coin in it. Now, it's not impossible that a fish, that somebody threw the coin in and he ate it, whatever. But the fact that he would just... Anyway, I think Peter was going, well, I'll do it, Lord, but I think you're a little nuts. What he was saying was, you don't have to worry about it. Even the tax man, you don't have to worry about. I'll provide. I've got this great... I misspoke. One guy that came to our pastor group last week, he is a crazy charismatic. He's well known in Tuscaloosa. He's been there 30 years. Just a wonderful, wonderful guy. He said, I told somebody in my congregation, I hope I have to pay $200,000 in tax debt next year. And the guy went, what are you crazy? He goes, no, just think how much money God's going to bless me if I have to pay $200,000 in tax. But that's just another story. See, call me crazy, but I believe adversity is and has always been good for the people of God. Now, I'm not saying that it feels good. I'm saying what it produces in the believers, the true believers, the wimpy believers just sort of fall by the wayside. But the real believers grow. I mean, I don't have the time. You guys probably go about a half hour. There's so many things that I'm thinking of. You know the story about Perpetua and Felicity, right? The young girl. I mean, most people don't know that Perpetua, the rich lady, was 22. And the maid, Felicity, was only like 18 or 17. I mean, they were just so zealous for God. I mean, I got to tell you this. It'll take a few seconds, but it's such a good story. Do you know that the father of Perpetua wasn't a believer? And Perpetua was still nursing. It's a two-year-old. She had a two-year-old. He brings the kid, I think it was her, the baby, and says, You can't. All you have to do, I've made a deal with the guy. You just renounce this Jesus guy, and you can take your baby and come home with us. She said, I can't do it. Now, your mother's in here. You know you're going like, what? That's fanatical. That's crazy. And it was even worse for Felicity. Well, I think it was. Felicity was mad because she was pregnant. And she could not be thrown to the lions if she was pregnant. She was still going to get thrown when the baby was, but she couldn't go with all her friends that were going next Friday. And she was praying to God, let me deliver this baby so I can go to see you with all my buds. Now, either they're crazy or we're crazy. Right? So either one or the other. Because they were saying, I want to be with Jesus so bad. I just think of that with a mother. All that. You know, these weren't hard. I mean, they had the love of God, and they weren't just sitting there going, oh, yeah, I can't wait to get out of here. You know, they weren't. There was just something that had grabbed them. This vision of eternity that we just don't have. Now, the writer of the Hebrews, he was writing to Christians that had been persecuted in the past, had converted to Christianity from Judaism right in the middle of all that. Now they were going through a second wave of persecution. And a lot of them were saying, you know what? We did this once. We're not doing it again. See, because all they had to do was renounce Jesus, go back to Judaism, and then everything was fine. And I think there's something to be said for the way the writer of Hebrews encourages them to stand firm in the midst of a new persecution. It's by reminding them what it was like and what they were like the first time it came. Verse 32 of chapter 10 of Hebrews. Think back on the early days when you first learned about Christ. Remember how you remained faithful even though it meant terrible suffering. Sometimes you were exposed to public ridicule and were beaten. And sometimes you helped others who were suffering the same things. You suffered along with those who were thrown into jail, and when all you owned was taken from you, you accepted it with joy. You knew there were better things waiting for you that will last forever. I don't know if you sort of fantasize how you're going to respond when and if something. I mean, just think of that. I mean, we can all sort of think about the suffering, but it says they were taken. Everything they had was taken from them. They gave up their homes. Not just, oh, Lord, okay, I guess I got to do it. With joy. With a deep-seated joy. the reason, because they knew that this wasn't it, that there was much more. They knew that death was the worst thing. That's what, and that's not bad. If the Bible is true, I mean, the only reason to stay here is to help more people into the kingdom of God. Is that not right? I mean, I often think about this. Jesus lived 33 years. Why do you think he picked 33? Aquinas thought, because that was how old we're going to be forever in heaven. Couldn't age before all the, although we have glorified bodies, I don't think I have to worry about that. But anyway, I mean, he could have said, hey, Father, you know, it's really, you know, this is a good creation we put together. Well, let me hang out for that 70 you talk about in Proverbs. He didn't. Jesus came here, he had a mission, and he could not wait to get back. So my guess is, even though he created this and it's the most beautiful thing in the world, and every time I see another travel video of someplace I haven't been, I said, I wish I could be here forever to see it all. I know that heaven is much better. And I know Paul, now he had the benefit. I haven't been caught up into the third heaven. But so he saw what we long to see, something like what John saw, I think. But let me refresh you with his understanding of why stay or long to stay in this body. I was looking at Gary, and he just reminded me of, is it Kenny Chesney that has that song out that says everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now? Google it and look at the words. It's classic. If I had thought of it, I would have printed them out and read them to you tonight, because unfortunately, it's most Christians. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to go now. Philippians 1:20. For I fully expect and hope that I will never be ashamed, but that I will continue to be bold for Christ as I have been in the past. And I trust that my life will bring honor to Christ whether I live or die. For to me, living means living for Christ, and dying is even better. But if I live, I can do more fruitful work for Christ. So I really don't know which is better. I'm torn between two desires. I long to go and be with Christ, which is far better for me. But for your sakes, it's better that I continue to live. Is Paul crazy? He's saying there that it's much better for me to be in heaven. Do you know how freeing that is? Just think of it. I mean, if you really have, if you're just saying, Lord, I want to be of service to you and to your people. But if I'm not, can I come home? And really mean it. I mean, really mean it. My wife thinks it's a threat sometimes. She goes, you're not going without me. Because I say, I'm ready any day. Any day I'll go. You're not going. You're not leaving me here. William Barclay, who I have trouble with a lot of his anti-miraculous tendencies. But once in a while, he really hits one out of the park. And this is what he says about the writer of Hebrews. To the writer of Hebrews, life was a thing that was on its way to the presence of Christ. Isn't that good? All life is a vehicle to get us to the presence of Christ. It was therefore never something that could be allowed to drift. It was life's end which made the process of life all important. What Paul was saying, what Barclay said, which I would put even more pithy, don't sweat the small stuff, and everything is small, even death, in this light of eternity. Some wise man once said that for every 100 men that can stand adversity, only one can stand prosperity. Isn't that weird? It's true. Doesn't sound true. But I'm sure you've heard about Hannibal. If you had to study Latin in school, you did anyway. The Gallic Wars, Hannibal, across the seas, across the Alps, Hannibal. Anyway, what you might not remember is that Hannibal was really putting a hurting on Rome. And it looked like he was going to win. First time they ever saw elephants. Anyway, they wintered in Capua, this luxurious city that they had taken over. You know, one winter did what the Roman army for 3 years couldn't do. Defeated them. They didn't want to fight. All their morale was sucked out of them. When Hannibal said, let's go, guys, they said, You go. Well, they went, but they got wiped out. Someone, I think it was Josephus, said, ease had ruined them when struggle had toughened them. Why is the church so strong everywhere else? I know some say miracles. The bishop had a great word on the treasures of the poor. See, I think the church in Africa, China, the Philippines, and I haven't been there, and neither nobody has, but probably North Korea and Iran are probably the strongest. The church, I'm not saying it's the biggest. I'm saying the church that remains is the strongest in those places. Did you hear about that 33-year-old mother of three in North Korea that was put to death for distributing Bibles? Did you hear about her? This just happened like 3 months ago. And what you didn't, if you didn't hear that, you definitely didn't hear that. Not only that, but her, after they put her to death, they put the father and the three kids in a political prison. I thought about Perpetua with that saying. I mean, I don't know if she knew. I mean, I think she had to know that there was a chance that she could. But here she was putting, and I was wondering what her. I'd love to talk to her husband, saying, "How are you with this? Did you talk about this beforehand?" I have a funny feeling you'd hear an amazing story of faith, and it's God's will, and we don't understand it, but we're going with it. We're going forward with the Lord. See, I fear for the church in the West in general, and in the United States, specifically Alabama, specifically Tuscaloosa, and by extension, Selma, because that's where I am. Because I'm not so sure when the shaking comes, even though the Lord has told us, he said it would come. He said there will always be tribulations. My black friend says that means you're going to tribulate. You know what the word tribulation means? It means extensive pressure being put upon an individual or situation. See, we can't act like the world, and it chagrins me that when this shaking that's coming down, that I really believe is coming. I don't think it's hype. I don't think it's scaring people. I think it's what Jesus did. He said, be warned. I mean, you heard the gospel on Sunday, right? He says, hey, I'm telling you, this is going to happen. And you know what he said? Remember what he said? He said, head for the hills. Now, some people think he was speaking, you know, isn't that a nice picture? Do you know that the literalists back then really won out? Because you know the ones that didn't head for the hills? You know what happened to them? Over a million were starved to death. Have I told you the stories of what actually happened to that million people that stayed in Jerusalem when the hammer came down? They didn't listen to the Lord. They said, get out of here. See, we shouldn't shrink back. We're warned. When the stuff comes, we should be going, all right, here it is. Let's get to work. Let's do what we're called to do. See, Jesus didn't tell us in these last days. See, I believe, I'm sure the bishop does too, that there's multiple answers to prophecy. And just because the hammer came down in 70 AD doesn't mean there isn't something for today. Because what he said for us to do was simple. It wasn't head for the hills. It would be hard to do in Selma, right? Not too many hills around here. He said to watch and pray. Look for the signs and pray for your battle command. How are you going to handle it when the hammer comes down? Ask yourself that, because it's so important to the witness of the cross. And again, from Sunday's reading, we got a good... I take Daniel to the bank, not just because of the scripture, because, I mean, all the prophecies, do you know, all the messianic prophecies that came exact? I mean, Jesus had to be born when he was born based on Daniel 9:23-24. So when he gets an end time vision, I'm going to listen to it. Now, tell me if you find anything wrong with the first part of this, 12:1. When I read this, I said, wait a second. At that time, Michael the archangel, who stands guard over your nation, will arise. Now, I read that part and I go, good. We pray that every Sunday, right? Protect us in battle. Come. You're going to bring all those angels and you're going to do battle for us. So you expect things to get good, right? Then there will be a time of anguish greater than any since the nations first came into existence. What? Michael, you're risen. You're standing for us. You're fighting the good fight. But at that time, every one of your people whose name is written in the book will be rescued. That's the good news. Now listen to this, because I think this is the battle plan for us who are called to stand firm in these last days. Those who are wise will shine as bright as the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness will shine like stars forever. You see what Daniel's saying? I mean, the wise are the ones that hear the word of the Lord and believe it. The ones that see the calamity, they know against what they see, because it says Michael arises and all, you know what, hits the fan. But they're wise and they're lights. Lights draw things to it, especially in the darkness. That's what he's saying here. He's saying the wise will be bright as guide. Those who lead many to righteousness, it'll be like a magnet. I believe more are going to come to faith in these last days than all that have come before. But it won't be easy. See, the Lord sustains us in the tribulation. He doesn't take us out of it. I wish he did. I wish I could be one of those dispensational, hey, church gets taken out, and it's great. Party in heaven while everybody else gets banged. I don't think it's going to happen. It won't be easy. Verse 10, many will be purified, cleansed, and refined by these trials. But the wicked will continue in their wickedness, and none of them will understand. Only those who are wise will know what it means. See, the Lord wants us to be wise. He told us this stuff, all this end time stuff in Mark 13. Because he wanted us to know. He didn't want us pulling our hair out and saying, Lord, why are you doing this? We've been going to church. We've been good. No. He said, this is how it's going to be. But I'll rescue in it. And the worst that happens is you get to see me a lot quicker. That's not a bad deal. If you really believe it. So many say they believe it, but see, in the midst of hard times, with the economy going apart, people that are living at peace, that are not retrenching, that are not saying, I'm hanging on to mine, they're going out and saying, how can I help those around me? They're going to be lights. People are going to say, what is it with you? How can you be? That's why the church has always prospered when the hammer was coming down. Because the believers believed. And they acted on their beliefs. They didn't believe in theory. They said, no, I see. I mean, have you seen all these things for 2012, the movie 2012? I mean, just think of it. I'm not saying that's going to happen. But I am saying the shaking's coming. That was pretty shaky. But you notice they didn't shake any mosques or Mecca or anywhere. Do you notice that? That was a decision they made. They can shake the Sistine Chapel and St. Peter's and Christ the Redeemer in Rio de Janeiro. That's okay, but don't go ticking off the Muslims. But how are you going to respond? See, you got to decide now. I don't have the exact verse, but it's Luke 21. Jesus says, determine beforehand not to worry. Why? Because you ever told anybody in the midst of a calamity, don't worry? What do? They worry all the more. So Jesus says, you got a decision to make. Are you going to be wise? Determine beforehand not to worry. Determine beforehand to say, hey, Lord, you said it was going to happen. What can I do? How can I serve you in the midst of this calamity? That is going to change. It's going to change you because you're going to be filled with faith. But it's going to change the people around you because they're going to say, maybe there really is something to all this. Miracles are great. But I'm telling you, the greatest miracle is somebody standing in the midst of the calamity saying, come on, gang. Come to the Lord. He said he'd be there for you. Well, again, back to Hebrews, because there's some good advice for those of us that will be in the midst of this. So do not throw away, this is verse 35 of chapter 10, do not throw away this confident trust in the Lord. Now, I just love that because it's like saying faith. Confideles, with faith, confidence. He's saying, so do not throw away your faith, trust, which is faith in the Lord. He says, really trust now. This is the time. Oh, you can trust in the Lord when everything's going well. But now, when the hammer's down, really trust and watch. Remember the great reward it brings you. See, he points back to the past. He's going, look, remember. They took away everything you had. And you were sitting there praising the Lord with joy. It's a reward. Don't throw it away. Patient endurance is what you need now. So that you will continue to do God's will. Then you'll receive all that he promised. See, we're called to be people of peace in the midst of this turmoil. We have a strong tower. We really are supposed to give all our fret and fear. Not supposed to have any of it. His love casts away all of that stuff. See, one of the temptation when the hammer comes down is for us to run around like rabbits. I almost said rats. That wouldn't have been good. But scurrying around. We got to do it. I learned something interesting this week. I might have heard it before, but I don't remember hearing it. So I think I just learned it for the first time. The Chinese, you know, their words are not words. They're characters. Characters are symbols. Each symbol means something. Do you want to know the word for busyness in Chinese? It's the two symbols. One, the heart. Two, annihilation. Isn't that great? Busyness is heart annihilation. You could probably stretch it as a preacher and say tribulation. It's crushing the heart with busyness, with doing things. See, that's going to be the temptation, the tendency to move in that. I think the Lord's calling us in the midst of that insanity. And it's going to come. In our lifetime, I believe we're going to see a lot of it, if not the final thing. But we're called to rest. How do we live? Well, I'll close with, and again, that's why I love the lectionary. The psalm for today tells us how to live in the midst of that tribulation. Psalm 101. I will sing of your love and justice, Lord. I will praise you with songs. I will be careful to live a blameless life. When will you come to help me? I will lead a life of integrity in my own home. I will refuse to look at any vile or vulgar thing. I hate all who deal crookedly. I will have nothing to do with them. I reject perverse ideas and I stay away from evil. I will not tolerate people who slander their neighbors. I will not endure conceit and pride. I will search for faithful people to be my companions. Only those who are above reproach will be allowed to serve me. I will not allow deceivers to serve in my house, and liars will not stay in my presence. My daily task will be to ferret out the wicked and free the city of the Lord from their grip. See, I believe the Lord has compassion for the city, for your city, for my city, for the state of Alabama. And I think he's calling us to be wise lights in these shaky times.